Hey folks, today's episode was sponsored by Datadog. It's a cloud scale monitoring and analytics platform. Datadog was built to bring clarity to complex dynamic applications in the cloud, on premises, in containers, or wherever they run. With beautiful dashboards, distributed tracing, and seamless integrations with more than 200 technologies, including Azure and Docker and PagerDuty, Datadog provides deep end-to-end visibility into the health and performance of modern apps. Visualize key metrics, set alerts to identify anomalies, and collaborate with your team to troubleshoot and fix issues fast. I'd like you to try it yourself by starting a free 14-day trial today. Listeners of this podcast will also get a free Datadog t-shirt. Get started at bit.ly.com/datadogshirt. That's bit.ly.com/datadogshirt. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, I'm talking with April Wenzel. She's a founder of Compassionate Coding, and you can check her out at April Wenzel, WENSEL.com. Thanks for chatting with me today.
Hello. Hi. Happy to be here.
I'm looking at your website. I've seen you online, and you give lots of talks about this concept of compassionate coding. And when I was talking to you earlier, I said, well, is this like soft skills or squishy skills? And you checked me, and I appreciated the check. Why is that a wrong word to use?
Yeah, so when we use terms like soft or squishy, that doesn't sound like something that people would care about, right? I mean, especially because the connotations with soft are weakness. We say things like, he's gone soft. It's also associated, I think, to a certain extent with women. And to be honest, not that there's anything wrong with being associated with women, but soft, quote, soft skills are important for everyone to develop, not just women. And so I think that this association is harmful because it keeps people from giving these skills the importance that that they really should have. And on top of that, I mean, what we're talking about here are complex kind of psychological phenomena that really aren't really soft even in that, you know, area. They're very complicated. There's science behind it. So in that sense, too, they're definitely hard in terms of difficulty and like complexity as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've also talked a lot online about the idea of emotional intelligence, and I've always heard, you know, IQ and EQ, and it seems like we really promote this idea that people should be smart and IQ is so important, but I've never taken a class on EQ or learning about emotional intelligence.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. I feel like that's the case for most people. We are starting to see some social emotional learning happening in school curriculum, but I think right now only out in California and places like that, not kind of in the mainstream. But empathy, you know, that's one aspect of emotional intelligence. Like, it's definitely a skill that can be learned. It's not just something you're either born with or not born with, you know.
That's very interesting. Why is it that we seem to think that people are born smart or not smart, or they're born with an emotional, you know, core emotional intelligence? It seems like everything can be learned and we should be promoting that.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a big fan of Carol Dweck's work on growth mindset, which is this idea, just like you said, that whatever skill it is that we want to develop, it doesn't matter where we're starting from, we can get better. We may not, you know, there may be an eventual limit that we hit, or, you know, it may take us longer than other people, but all of us are capable of growing whatever skills we decide to.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring up the growth mindset, because I'm thinking about my two kids. While I just made an assertion that they're not learning about emotional intelligence, in fact, the growth mindset has been a part of the curriculum at their school. So
that's great. That's
cool that you brought up Carol Dweck.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of hers and her work. And, you know, because I think there's this idea in tech especially that, you know, you're either born to be a coder or not, you know, and that either, I think Jeff Atwood had this blog post where he said that the computers chose him or something like that. And it's like, you know, for some people, that's the case. That's their origin story. You know, that's how they feel. That's how they frame it. But that's not the case for everyone. Some people, you know, we're interested in what they could build, interested in solving a specific problem. And so they learn to code. Or we have a lot of people coming to coding now later in life, you know, taking boot camps or being self-taught or whatever. And those people are, you know, I believe that we should welcome them just as much as we would welcome anybody who thinks that they were born, you know, to be a coder.
You know, that's a really, I really like the way you phrased that. This idea of the programmer's origin story really resonates with me because, you know, there are tropes in the superhero origin story. Somebody gets bit by a radioactive spider or they fall into a vat of whatever. And there's the origin story of, I was given an Apple II at age 12. But why is that any more interesting or more valuable than I was a teacher for 20 years and I decided I want to get into tech and I quit my job and at 45 decided to become a programmer? That's a pretty cool origin story too, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
You did an interview with building programmers, and I like that idea that, the programmers are built. They're not. They're not born.
Yeah, I think that's really true.
So when we talk about these terms, and now I'm not going to use terms like soft and squishy, what should I say? Because I want to make a compassionate environment. I want everyone to feel that they are they're valued. But you know, they say in programming, naming stuff is hard, right? So here we are looking to name stuff.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that is one of the reasons naming is hard is that naming actually requires a great deal of empathy, because naming, and that includes naming variables, because the idea is you're not naming them for the machine. The machine doesn't care what you call the variables, and there's no right or wrong. There's no perfect name in terms of, you know, actual correctness. Naming is really about who it's for and who it's going to help. So in the case of variables, you're really naming based on who's going to be reading the code, including yourself, your future self, and also any of your collaborators. And so in this case, for skills, I mean, one thing is just to refer to them more specifically. Like, are you talking about communication skills? Are you talking about self-awareness, introspection? Just being more specific instead of kind of lumping them together. Another option is, you know, we talked about emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence skills would also be good. Some people use something like professional skills, but again, that's kind of vague and it's hard for people to know exactly what that means. I gave a talk and I talked about, well, it's a talk that I do frequently, and I refer to them as catalytic skills. It's a term I borrowed from Daniel Goleman, who's pretty big in the emotional intelligence world. And this idea of catalytic skills is that they help you catalyze your other skills. So for example, they may help you learn new technical skills. They may help you decide which technical skills to use, you know, which coding framework to use or whatnot. That requires a certain amount of problem-solving ability that's not actually directly a coding skill. It's more of sort of a meta skill, so to speak. So there's just a whole range of things you could call them other than soft skills. And I think it depends on your audience, really.
Yeah. I think that my initial reaction is that it might be hard to sell a more complicated word. But what the great thing about catalytic or catalyst is that it's more precise. It says exactly like this is a thing that precipitates a thing, and it causes it a better thing to happen. It's like it evokes the sense of change and chemical reaction in the body.
Yeah, that's what I like about it too. It's more precise, as you said.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that. So as we try to promote these kind of things, how do we push back on people that are like, oh, you know, that's just a word. It's not that big of a deal. Who cares?
Yeah. No, I hear that a lot. And it's the power of language is surprising. I mean, it does sound like, oh, what does it matter what we call it? But the thing is that we have so many associations in our head with different words, you know, and so that can have a huge impact on how we actually think about things. I mean, I think that's just undeniable. I mean, because if you think about the word soft, I mean, what comes to mind? Like, I think of like pillows. I think of Sears had these commercials in the 90s, the softer side of Sears. Like, I think of all these things that just, you know, are nothing that sound, you know, important or like something that I would need in the workplace. Whereas, you know, I hear catalytic and I think, you know, science and chemical reactions like you were talking about. I think of making things more efficient, faster, all that stuff. And so it sounds, you know what I mean? So I think if we look at the associations we have in our head, that's how we can see the power of language.
That's a really good point. And if someone were trying to do a soft skills workshop and sell it to like GE or some giant corporation, that might be challenging. But if you put together a catalytic skills workshop, you know, there's a certain personality type at a giant company that might be like, yeah, that's exactly what we need here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing a workshop at Node Summit coming up in the summer, and I called it Working with Humans. And that's really because that's what it's about, is like how to work well with humans as a human. And so that's kind of how I described it there.
That is funny, though. We are working with computers that are supposed to be deterministic and they follow instructions really well. And then, of course, the exact opposite of that are people, which are don't follow instructions particularly well and are hard to understand sometimes. But it is the coming together of those two things that where software happens, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think for too long, we've sort of been neglecting the human side of things. And I think you see this in the fact that, you know, most software projects are not failing because of technical reasons, really. They're failing for human reasons. It's, you know, people not communicating requirements or not prioritizing them well or not designing for the customer with the customers in mind and things like that. So I think this gap, this, you know, empathy gap and just emotional intelligence gap in general, that's been in tech for, you know, forever, mm-hmm. Has really been, you can see the evidence of it in with the technology that's been produced. So I think it's not just, you know, oh, let's just, you know, be nice to each other or whatever. It's more like, no, let's be more efficient and build better products by building empathy for each other and the people we're building for.
That's a really like actionable thing that you just said. Like you're not out promoting, come on, everyone, let's be nice. Let's all get mm-hmm. along. Like, hey, listen, if we want this to be a successful project, you working effectively with the human next to you or the cube over from you is as important as your code compiling.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you said before that when you tell people that your company is compassionate coding, they think that's like an oxymoron. You can't have one with the other.
Yeah, they do. That I've gotten that feedback. And I've said that what I would like is for people to think it's redundant. Like I would like it to be the norm that, you know, people in software are known to be empathetic, that they have this versatile ability to work both on machines and with human beings, you know, because I think that's where the real potential lies.
That would be amazing if we could make it so that tech felt like people knew like, oh, yeah, computer person, that's so great. Like this they're a great person. They're a kind person. They're a computer person.
Right. Know? Wouldn't that be fantastic?
That'd be crazy. But right now I just feel like, oh, I don't want to fix my dad's computer. You know, I think we're all just kind of burned out and we are having enough trouble being compassionate with ourselves and our family. It's difficult sometimes to be patient and kind at work.
Well, that's a really good point too, which is that the self-compassion is just as important. I mean, everything really starts with self-compassion. I mean, I don't think I could be doing the work that I'm doing if I didn't take enough time to take care of myself, take care of my own health, do the things that make me happy outside of work. And I think that's actually, it's hard to be empathetic to other people. It's hard to be compassionate with other people if you're not taking care of yourself in these ways. So that's actually a really important point.
Yeah, we hear a lot online about self-care, and I really like communities where we're telling each other and helping each other say like, hey, listen, take the time. If you need a break, you need a mental health afternoon, you know, if it's just not working for you today, if you can, take the time for yourself because you're no good to us stressed out.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's really important. And I would also say that, you know, this idea of you know, the programmers being kind people, it's not so far-fetched because if you think about it, we're problem solvers, right? So we look for pain points and we solve them. And that's really what compassion is about alleviating suffering, right? So reducing these pain points. So to a certain extent, technologists are kind of like primed to do this. I mean, although you're right, sometimes we're burnt out, mm-hmm. understandably. So I really do think that, you know, when you see things too, like open source, like and people who kindly contribute on Stack Overflow, that's a certain subset, hopefully a large subset, but it is a mm-hmm. subset. Those people are generous, right? That's generosity. They're not getting paid for this. And, you know, some of them, and at least in open source. And so, you know, I think that that's important too, is that we have these seeds of compassion already in tech. And that's why I really have faith that we can help those grow and blossom into beautiful compassion flowers.
Yeah, indeed. I like the idea of directly tying compassion and empathy and working well as a team to code quality. Mm-hmm. That you're not just saying your customers, your employees, your users will feel better. Your employees might not quit or whatever. You're literally saying the code will be higher quality and the shipping product will be better if everyone is focused on empathy and compassion.
Yeah, absolutely. Because really, for me, I look at compassion as an optimization problem where you're trying to minimize suffering. And so when you're talking about you know, should we test the code? Like, should we, you know, how should we build this? Being compassionate towards yourself and the people you're working with and the customer, right? All of these, if you take those into account, I mean, that's how you're going to get the best code, right?
Mm-hmm. This might be a bit of a stretch of an analogy, but I remember when I took my very first driving course when I was 16, and they did this thing where they were like, two people are going to drive in this simulator. One's going to drive as aggressively and as fast as possible and see if they get there first. And the other one will simply follow the rules and stop and, you know, be a good driver. And you drive for like 15, 20 minutes. And the person who drives aggressively and cuts people off ends up getting there about 90 seconds early.
Mm-hmm.
90 seconds, you know, out of 20 minutes. Now, certainly if they were trying to get to the hospital, maybe that's necessary. But they were trying to make the point that this person burned a half dozen bridges, was extraordinarily unsafe, pissed off half the road, and made it there with 15% more speed.
Mm-hmm. You
know? So applying that to code reviews, to an experience at work, minimal effort of being kind, being pleasant would cost you little, if nothing, if not maybe make things better.
Yeah, actually, I actually love that analogy because really while driving is one of the best times to practice empathy and compassion is, you know, when you're stuck behind somebody or somebody cuts you off or whatever it is, instead of just, you know, having a knee jerk, really angry reaction, but just taking a minute, like just taking a breath and thinking, you know, I don't know what that person's going through, you know, what might be going on in their life that's making them act this way. And that's like a great thing that all of us who drive or commute in any way really have the option to do is just to really think about and practice, you know, that concern for other people.
Mm-hmm. Hey, folks, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsors and remind you that when you support them, you're supporting Hansel Minutes because they make this show possible. Innovative developers help improve the lives of millions of small businesses and accountants that use QuickBooks worldwide. Your app could make the difference that helps them work smarter and put more money in their pocket. Enter Intuit Developer. From tech tools to growing your customer base to helping you get funding, Intuit Developer helps your app go from concept to company. Find out more at intuit.me/code. That's intuit.me/code. It makes me wonder, when did things get so angry and so selfish? When did the idea of compassion or empathy become synonymous with some kind of weakness?
Yeah, there's an interesting history there. And I don't know all of it. There's a great book called On Kindness. And it's about, it kind of charts the history over time, because there was a time, you know, especially because there's, you know, it ties into religion in some ways. I mean, not for me personally, but there's definitely a history there of when religion was bigger in society, like certain types of kindness were more popular. And then, you know, this industrialization happened too. And then it's like, you know, then it is all about efficiency. But the thing is that kindness really is compatible with efficiency, which is how I think this new kind of resurgence of kindness is going to happen, is that it's when you speak with emotional intelligence, when you're speaking to somebody, they are more likely to receive the feedback or what suggestions you're giving them, because it's not going to trigger their threat response. So if you come at somebody and you're like yelling at them or just even just being, quote, direct with them, overly direct, it's going to trigger their threat response, their fight or flight. And so they're not really going to listen to your message.
Right, right. And as a manager of people, a manager of developers, if I can express an issue, a concern, whatever, whether it be a code review or a managerial issue with someone, in a way that doesn't trigger their threat response, or that they know it is coming from a place of helpfulness, even if I make a mistake or say mm-hmm. something incorrectly, they won't necessarily flip the bid on me and assume mm-hmm. that I had, you know, a malice aforethought.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Jonathan Salk is someone that you have tweeted about before, and he's got a book out now called A New Reality, Human Evolution for a Sustainable Future. And you pulled out a pull quote out of his book where you said that Salk believes that we as a society are kind of transitioning from a time of competition and independence with win-lose strategies to a focus on cooperation and interdependence. Sometimes it doesn't feel like that. Do you believe that?
I do believe that. Like part of what the book is about is the fact that we are in this transition, and that's why there's so much conflict. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, whenever you're going through a transition, there's conflict. in the new agey world, people talk about a healing crisis, where when you're healing, like sometimes things get worse before they get better. And so I think sometimes it seems like things are getting worse now, and everybody, you know, but I think really what's happening is we're talking about these things and we're trying to make changes and to make progress. And it's inevitable that in that time, there's going to be resistance. There's going to be the people who want to protect the status quo. Like I encounter that all the time in trying to push for compassion in tech. It's like the people who have been getting by without being compassionate in tech, like really don't want to be compassionate because it's, you know, it does take effort and they're, you know, doing fine. They have, you know, cushy jobs that they, you know, they're allowed to be a jerk to their, you know, the people on their team because, you know, quote, they're the programmer, you know. So there's a lot of resistance there. But at the same time, the fact that we're even talking about this, right? I mean, that's progress. And so I think we see that on a global scale as well, that, you know, we're talking about, you know, when you look at too, like the resources, just everything that's, you know, being depleted, like we have to change how we live because what we're doing is just not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. I think that we're all kind of hoping for the Star Trek, the Next Generation world that we're promised, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Food for all. And we would all just kind of be, you know, everyone in Star Trek, like no one has a, like, I don't really think about how Jean-Luc Picard gets a W-2. Like he's not really getting a paycheck. He just, like, there's food at the wall. And he does art when he has spare time. Really, all they get to worry about is their time and their intellectual pursuits. That would be the ideal.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think we can get there, you know? I mean, I think some people think, oh, that's, you know, unrealistic utopia, whatever. But I don't think so, because I think, you know, we can all make small changes every day to work towards this, you know, brighter vision of the future. Just, you know, we're more collaborative and more cooperative and just really taking care of each other more. And even if you do it, even if, like I said, even if just when you're in traffic, if you think about it, I mean, you're still helping raise the global kindness level, you know? So I think whatever small steps we can take are definitely worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. I want to dig a little bit more into the idea that you have is that minimizing suffering, because compassionate is a word that has certain connotations. And in trying different words out in my mouth and in my brain to try to get an understanding of your perspective, the idea of minimizing suffering, or suffering is like a really bad word. Like that's bad. We definitely don't want more of that. Mm-hmm. You're saying compassion is the key to minimizing suffering for yourself, for your users, for your team, for the devs, for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So there's, you know, there's different definitions of compassion, but there's one that I read from the Greater Good Science Center at UC Berkeley, and they had this idea that compassion is kind of a more active version of empathy. Because with empathy, you know, you can feel what the other person's feeling, and there's different types of empathy, but that's, you know, what it essentially boils down to. Whereas compassion, you not only can feel how other people are feeling, but you actively desire to make them feel better, right? So you want to reduce their suffering. And so that's why I choose compassion when I talk about this as often as I can. Of course, I also use empathy because, you know, that's become the buzzword that people understand a bit more. But really, I think the next level is really compassion, because it's just more active. And it's also potentially more rational, because you don't necessarily even have to be very emotional at the time to make a compassionate decision, because you really can look at it logically and think, okay, given all the parties involved, which step forward will involve the least suffering, right? Or the most pleasure. But let's be honest, like a lot of times it's just about minimizing suffering. So yeah, that's why I prefer that kind of way of looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. Talk to me a little bit more about that empathy versus compassion. So empathy is feeling what the other, you know, what the other people are thinking, but compassion is kind of on the way to altruism, but not quite there.
Yeah, compassion is more, it's just more active. So it's like you could, instead of, you can, because you could be empathetic, you could feel what someone's feeling and just not care, right? So you can feel what they're feeling and just move on with your life. Compassion is more, you feel what they're feeling and you're like, oh, they're suffering. I want to make them feel better. So it takes that active step. So you actually commit to wanting to do better. And that's what makes compassion different. And yeah, altruism is another thing, closely related, of course. And you know, it can be differentiated in different ways. But, you know, there, I think the difference is pretty subtle in terms of altruism. But they're all different, but related concepts is how I look at it.
It's a really interesting spectrum. I mean, like we said, naming things is hard. But once you get the taxonomy down, it's pretty powerful. There's a really cool infographic that I'll put in the show notes by Robert Shelton, who's a psychologist, who talks about pity. Hey, I acknowledge that you're suffering. Sympathy, I care about your suffering. Empathy, like you said, I feel your suffering for myself. And compassion, you know, I want to relieve it. Let's work together to relieve your suffering. It's a spectrum as you head in one direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And again, it's like, you know, many concepts where different different schools of thought have, you know, different lines that they draw and whatnot. So I think mm-hmm. it's important just that whenever people talk about it, to yeah, just get on the same page. You know, it's, you know, there's this tendency, I think, in tech, especially for there to be like a right or wrong answer, or like, you know, it's either this way or that way. And I think in general, even when it comes to like technical terms, it's more just how you define it and how we agree that we're going to define it and move forward in the conversation versus like, this is the absolute right definition. You know what I mean?
That's a really good point. So ultimately, it just matters if my team and we all agree on how we're going to treat each other and the right thing that we're going to do and what compassion or empathy means to us. It doesn't matter that the universe agree on the exact definitions.
Exactly.
And is that the kind of thing that one would learn in a work group or a workshop rather, or if we watch some of your videos online on the topic?
Yeah, that's one of the things. Yeah. So really, the workshops, they break down emotional intelligence in terms of the self and then social interactions. And then I always talk about continuous improvement. So we always have an action plan at the end to kind of how you're going to keep improving. And so self-awareness and self-management is really about being aware of your own emotions and deciding, you know, how to manage them, how to understand what your emotions really mean. And then in the social interaction component, we talk about, you know, how to communicate with empathy, how to imagine what other people are thinking and feeling and asking them and discussing it directly, caring about that. And then effective communication styles, things like that. And then continuous improvement is really where I take the idea of the agile retrospective from agile software development and I apply it at a personal level. And it's something that's really helped me a lot to make improvement in my own life using this personal retrospective. And so I always share that in the workshops too, because, you know, this is an ongoing process. It's not just like you do a workshop or you read a book and then, okay, I'm emotionally intelligent now. It's more like it's a continuous process.
Yeah. Somehow I was hoping I would go through this process and I'd be able to put this on my LinkedIn. I'd be like, you've been acknowledged yeah, right. for, yeah.
Exactly.
April says you're compassionate, so it's okay now.
Yeah, exactly.
But it really is a process. You're never all the way there and you're certainly going to fall back. You're going to say the wrong thing in a meeting. You're going to insult someone accidentally or upset someone. And then you say, hey, I hear you. I hear what you said.
Yeah. And that's where self-compassion comes in handy because, you know, for sure, like the other day, like I tweeted something sarcastic and I realized that that's not really how I want to be in the world and it's not consistent with my values. But instead of beating myself up, like, oh my gosh, I'm a horrible person again. I thought, well, you know, I was feeling this and that, whatever. It doesn't excuse what I did, but it's more like I understand why I did that. And so, you know, I have compassion for myself and I'm going to do better in the future. And that's really all it takes.
Mm-hmm. There was another interesting thing I want to kind of end on Twitter, which mm-hmm. isn't really a compassionate place, but I see you a lot there and I'm there a lot. So somehow we are trying to find a balance between being empathetic and compassionate people and going to kind of the least compassionate place online. Yeah. There was a discussion around an individual posted what they thought was an innocuous tweet saying, hey, you know, if you switch jobs every year, we're probably not the right fit for you. Mm-hmm. And they didn't think that that was particularly controversial. And mm-hmm. Twitter disagreed, indicating that not everybody has the privilege to stick around at a crappy, poisonous job for a year. And you were kind of involved in that. And I noticed that at the end of it, the individual wrote a whole post about it that was very empathetic. Were you involved at all directly to get someone to go through like the, I believe something, no, I really, really believe it. I'm going to double down on believing this to the, wow, you changed my perspective.
Yeah, no, I definitely can't take credit for that because I think that individual got a lot of tweets about his tweet. But I was really touched by the fact that he took a step back because people were kind of jumping on him too for not replying right away. And I was thinking, and I actually did tweet this and I included him in that, which is that I hope he's just taking a step back and thinking about this because, you know, I think that there's this idea that, oh, you have to respond immediately. But the problem is when people respond immediately, it's usually coming from that, you know, amygdala in the brain. It's coming from that fight or flight defense, the really defensive kind of viewpoint. And so you're going to defend yourself. You're going to attack other people just because, you know, that part of that lizard brain that's still with us is going to come out. And that's like what most of Twitter is, right? So I actually thought it was great that he took a step back. He got a lot of different perspectives. He gathered a lot of perspectives. And then, yeah, like you said, his blog post was really empathetic, really thoughtful. And I think that that's the value of these, like, you know, longer form posts. I mean, you know, I do tweet a lot, you know, I know you tweet a lot too. Mm-hmm. And I try to be thoughtful in my tweets, but, you know, people can misconstrue them and then it leads to misunderstandings and all that sort of stuff. And blog posts are a little bit safer in that regard, just because you can explore things in more depth. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Twitter's an interesting place. Sometimes empathy happens there, sometimes not so much.
Yeah, I think it's Twitter's actually a lot like work. Sometimes I find joy and it feeds my spirit and I love going to Twitter. And other days I'm just like, I really can't do this today.
That sounds about right.
So are there a particular video that you would recommend that someone would explore if they were going to go and take a look at your site? And like, what's the best introduction to compassionate coding?
Yeah. So on compassionatecoding.com, I have a site, like a media page. And mm-hmm. I think the one that gives the best kind of overview is Emotional Intelligence for Engineers, a talk that I gave at NG Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So I think that one's probably the best one to start with.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, we were actually at the same conference at the same time. I was at NG Atlanta as well.
Yes, I believe that's true.
Yeah, and that was a great talk that you gave, and the video online is really great. It's about 20 minutes long, so it's not going to be like, you know, 90 minutes of your time, and it's definitely worth taking the moment. It's interesting, of course, that it's on YouTube. Hopefully the comments will be complimentary.
Yeah, there were some interesting comments there, but I don't have control over the comments there, but I think the organizers there have been pretty good about at least hiding the worst ones.
I've always felt like the thing that's wrong about YouTube is the down arrow. Like, who needs to down arrow something? It either needs to have an up arrow or no arrow. Like, you know, like, I don't want to thumbs down anything. I would just be nice or say nothing, you know?
Yeah, thankfully it hasn't. It's, what's funny is it hasn't gotten too many down errors, but somebody posted it on 4chan of all places, and that attracted some interesting comments. So if you look at the hidden comments, I don't recommend looking at the hidden comments. How about that to everybody who watches?
I'm going to go ahead and not do that because I decided to become a compassionate coder.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
Thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is super fun.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.